Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Welcome to the show. We are live from RFA Church here in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's been a great afternoon so far. Evangelicals for Trump, praise, prayer, and patriotism with one of the president's children. We say children, even though Eric's not a child anymore, but he is a child of the president, so that counts, right? I think I can go with that title, but he's on his way back to the airport. Eric Trump, thanks for calling in, man. How are you?
Steve, what a crew that was. That was, you know, for the audience, we just finished up at an unbelievable evangelical church, and the reception there was just beautiful. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. It was so nice to see.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting, and the nice thing about being at a church like this is, first of all, it's open, and in North Carolina, that is a rare thing indeed, because our leftist governor has shut everything down and never saw the church as essential, although he saw abortion clinics as essential. So tell me about your involvement with these Evangelical for Trump rallies, because, you know, there was a huge one, obviously, the other night here in North Carolina, 30,000 people plus for your dad, but these ones are a little bit different because, you know, they're fully embraced on the faith side with praise and worship. So what's it like to be at one of these rallies?
Yeah, well, listen, I've done a lot of them in North Carolina, and I've all across the state. I've pretty much never torn up the state, and I've done a lot of them all over the country. And, you know, faith in this country is under attack. There's no question about it. You have the Democratic, it's not the Democratic Party, it's a radical left party that, you know, pulls out the words under God and the Pledge of Allegiance, and they attack Christianity every day, and they attack, you know, faiths and beliefs. And, you know, we're kind of getting into this. You just said it best. I mean, you know, they're happy to have liquor stores open, but they won't allow people to worship in a church. And, you know, the far left party is against the nuclear family in this country. And, you know, they brag that they're the party of the atheists. And I don't understand it. I mean, we need a lot more faith in this country. We need a lot more, you know, God in this country. We need a lot more family in this country. You know, there is a war out there on it. I don't think there's ever been a president that's done more to protect faith in the United States than my father. I mean, what he did with the Johnson Amendment and what he did with so many other things protecting religious liberty, I'm incredibly proud of him. And people in this country see it, and they realize it, and they're appreciative of it. And, you know, even signing the executive order, making, you know, churches essential, you know, to kind of buck governors, yeah, like the one you have in North Carolina that literally wanted to do the exact opposite. And so I'm really proud of him, and I can tell you, I mean, the reception you saw it in there, just unbelievable. The love, there's never been so much love. I mean that. And you know, it feels great.
Yeah, and you mentioned that, Eric, while you were here speaking at, I'm at RFA Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. We're on the phone with Eric Trump. And you mentioned it while you're here, and especially we heard that at recent rallies. I've never heard it. I'm a little bit older than you. I've never heard it at a rally, a political rally for a president or anybody else, to hear 20, 30, 40,000 people chanting, "I love you." But that's the depth of the bond that's happened between your dad and a lot of conservatives, most conservatives, and a lot of evangelicals, if not most. And it's really, I don't think any of expected to have that kind of relationship back in 2015 and 2016, but based on what your dad's done, that's certainly why it exists today.
You know, we had a lot of, you know, rowdy rallies, and they were a lot of fun, right? And, you know, you had the chance, build the wall, and other things, and, you know, they're fun, and it's entertaining, and it's, but you know what, honestly, when you hear 30,000 people chanting, "I love you," and they mean it. I mean, it's not just a chant, I mean, I mean it, and there's more love in this country right now than there's ever been before. If you turn on the TV, you'd never know it. I mean that. You'd never, ever know it. But when you see hundreds and hundreds of right. people on a Friday, you know, early afternoon, coming out with their children to, you know, to a church to, you know, to see a surrogate of the president speak, and, you know, having hundreds and hundreds of people, and the kids are dressed up, and they're wearing Make America Great hats, and they love this nation. And, I mean, people love the red, white, and blue. They love our national anthem. They love our Pledge of Allegiance. They love what this country stands for. They love our Constitution. They love God, and they love faith, and they love the Second Amendment. They love what this country has always stood for. And they see a radical left party that wants to change that. They want to get rid of faith in society. They want to, you know, increase taxes by $4 trillion. They want socialized health care. I mean, I could go down the list. I mean, they're willing to attack law enforcement officers. They're totally fine having chaos in the streets and, you know, so on and so forth. I mean, you saw so much of it last night. And then you have a president on the other hand that stands for wanting the greatest military and wanting the best law enforcement, wanting safe societies and school choice and the best educational systems and, you know, the lowest unemployment and, you know, literally criminal justice reform and peace in the Middle East. I mean, just this morning, they it's the third peace deal that they've done in the last 3 weeks in the Middle East. Today was Sudan and Bahrain and the UAE. And it's beautiful. And look at the embassy. Look at the embassy moving to Jerusalem. And I mean, look what he's done with religious liberty across the board. And, you know, people are super appreciative of that. And that's why you have the love that you do.
Yeah, and it was like last night in the debate when that kind of closing question about what do you do if you win and talking about unity, and your dad made an incredible point that success for the country is one of the best things that unifies us because a rising tide lifts all boats. We saw that with what happened with the unemployment rate, with people of color, whether it's African-Americans or Asians or Hispanics, and wages coming up. That's what's good for America is when America is more healthy. And I'm hopeful that we're going to get back to that. We've got about a minute and a half left, Eric, and I know you got to get going. But speak specifically, most of our audiences across North Carolina, speak to us as North Carolinians in terms of getting out between now and November 3rd and supporting your dad.
Well, listen, getting out in North Carolina is going to be, you know, probably the most important state in the country in terms of the vote. It's absolutely critical. It's always very, very close. And it's a state that I care about. I mean, I named my daughter after North Carolina. My daughter's name is, you know, Carolina, and my wife's from Wrightsville Beach. It's a state that we love. It's a state that, I mean, I spend pretty much every vacation down here outside of, you know, my home. And it is the second home for us, so we love it, and we're going to win it. And my father will never let North Carolina down. He'll always preserve religious liberty, and he'll always fight for the economy, and he'll always fight for the flag, and he'll always fight against people, you know, kneeling for the anthem. And this is a war that we're in right now, and it's I don't think any politician has ever sacrificed. And he's not a politician, but there's never been so much that, you know, his life would be exponentially better, having not done this.
Yeah.
I really believe he's saving this country, and he's saving everything that we believe
in. That's for sure.
And that's why we fight as hard as we do.
Eric Trump, one really quick, how can we pray for you and your family?
Well, pray, and pray a lot, because prayers got us here. Believe me, I really believe that the hand of God was on him, and prayers got us here. So keep praying.
Amen. Eric Trump, God bless you, brother. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, live from RFA Church here in Raleigh. It was good to have Eric Trump on the show. First time we had him on the show, we had Laura Trump, his wife, on a little week ago. We've had Hogan Gidley was on Monday. He's the senior campaign director for the president's campaign. And then at after the bottom of the hour here at around 4:32 Eastern time, we're going to talk to Steve Cortez, who's a senior advisor to the Trump campaign. He's been around the Trump administration since about 2016. He was involved with the campaign back then. So we'll talk to him. I want to get his take on how they felt the debate went last night and what they're really focusing on here in the next 9 days. We're not that far away, aren't we? It's just amazing because it's, you know, today is Friday, October 23rd. So there's 31 days in October. So we got 8 days. And then we have November 3rd. The election, and I went out and voted early for the first time in my adult life yesterday because I was just concerned. I mentioned this on the air the other day, a little birdie who's well-placed, very godly person, very mature, not given to conspiracy theories. I was actually shocked that this person said to me they were going to vote early. They never have either in their entire adult life, and I was like, well, why? And this person was really concerned that something might happen COVID-related, and Governor Cooper could kind of shut down Election Day, worried about a super spreading event. And then if that ran up to the North Carolina State Supreme Court, which would be an emergency injunction, I mean, it would go up to the North Carolina Supreme Court instantaneously. I mean, it would probably be within 24 hours easily, if not less. Then it's 6-1. Paul Newby is the only conservative on the North Carolina State Supreme Court running for the justice, the Chief Justice of the North Carolina State Supreme Court. And so you sit there and you go, okay, well, if there's six of one way and one of the other, and it goes to the North Carolina State Supreme Court, well, you can see where the problem is there. So I voted early yesterday, and a really neat moment that happened yesterday. I've got a buddy from a Friday morning Bible study, Danny Lotz, who is in heaven now, but he was married to Ann Graham Lotz, Billy Graham's daughter, for many, many years. And he started a Friday morning Bible study that's coming up, I think, on almost 40 years. Okay, it's just an amazing group of men, godly men, very diverse, a little bit on the older side. The average age is, I don't know, probably 65 is the average age, maybe even a little older than that. So my buddy, one of my friends there, James, big, kind, wonderful guy, very emotive, cries easily, also happens to be an African-American. So we came out of the voting area in Raleigh and saw James and saw his granddaughter, and we knew his his son, the father of his granddaughter, who used to coach our son in basketball. So we're like, oh, hey, because we hadn't seen her before. Just a cute little girl. And so my wife's talking to the little girl, and then I see James, and James and I, you know, shake hands and give him a big hug. We've known each other for years. And it was just interesting, and this is a great way for us to think about our relationship with the world around us. It was interesting because we're there at a early voting location. There were a good number of people in line, so the political divide is deep and wide in this country. It's getting deeper. It's getting wider. And I think the easy thing would be to assume there's a white guy and there's a black guy. They probably don't vote the same way. They probably, you know, one's a Biden person, one's a Trump person. But we had this beautiful embrace. We had this just kind of having fun and laughing and loving on each other. And I looked past him looking at the people in the line, and some people were smiling, but a lot of people were just had this kind of quizzical look on their face. They're like, what's that all about? What's happening there? Like, that's kind of strange. And because I think the assumption, because we operate so much in the political realm, and we need to all remember this. I need to remember myself that, yes, I have dual citizenship. I'm a citizen of the United States, but primarily I'm a citizen of the kingdom. And we need to remember that. And those opportunities we have to be an oddball are really important. And so we weren't doing anything to put on a show or anything. We were just two brothers in Christ that loving on each other. But it was really interesting to me to watch some of the crowd react to that, the people that were in line, and just go, okay, this is good. This is what we need to do to provide an interesting witness to the world, is to love each other well. You know, Jesus said it himself, they'll know your mind by the way you love one another. And so whether it's in a difficult conversation or challenging each other, iron sharpening iron, or just how we greet each other and love on one another and that kind of joy of the Lord, really is obvious when we get together, which has been one of the biggest problems with the shutdowns, is all these churches shut down. And I understand Romans 13, and I understand loving your neighbor. But there's no substitute for face-to-face fellowship. That's why the church, as we looked at Ecclesia, as we consider that from the book of Acts and throughout the rest of the New Testament, that they gathered together. Because we need to be in the same space. YouTubing and Facebooking and Zooming doesn't get it done. It's like a temporary, a bad replacement, but it cannot do what only the presence of the Holy Spirit when we gather together does. And that's been one of the biggest shames. I fear that there's a lot of churches in America that simply won't open up again. Pastor Rob McCoy, I was reading a letter from him to a prominent church in California on yesterday's show. And he's just talking about, hey, this us gathering and taking communion, this is essential to the church as we gather, which then enables more ministry for us to minister to the communities around us. And they didn't see that as essential. And what's behind that? Well, certainly there's spiritual forces of darkness behind that. And then there's political forces, which oftentimes are all the same. But they just want to, you know, let's shut the churches down. I have some friends in the pro-life movement and Love Life, as you know. And they were at one abortion clinic. I think it was in Charlotte, and one of the pro-choicers there. And one of the locations down in Charlotte, it can be really, really nasty. Okay? Really, really nasty. A lot of swearing and just terrible things being said to the pro-lifers. And one girl said to somebody there, it might have even been Justin Reeder, the founder of Love Life, said, hey, you know, you guys should just stay in your church. Just do your little thing in your little buildings. Just stay in church, and don't come out here and bug anybody, which is exactly what Satan would want, right? It's certainly easier for us to just stay in our little bubble where we don't have to deal with anything. But other than that, we need to be out and about. And so Satan's been loving this, quote-unquote, shutting the church down. Of course, not even the gates of hell will prevail against her. But we need to remember that. And remember that when we're out in public. Remember that when we're just greeting one another, that you never know who's watching. And we need to be a peculiar people, an oddball in this environment. And sometimes that oddball is just being a person of peace and not necessarily, you know, waving your political opinion in everybody's face. Not afraid to share it, of course, being bold because we care and we care about our nation. But we don't have to be the fist-faced person. We don't have to be upset. We should have the joy of the Lord. We shouldn't sell that for a bowl of stew. And that we should have that peculiar, I say this often, we're really broke. We're broken over the condition of the world. But you have your salvation. You have the joy of the Lord. You have an eternal future that's secure. So it's like you've got this, hey, I know I've got some financial problems this week, but there's a check in the mail coming to me for $500,000. So you're like, so, you know, it's a bad week, but my salvation draws nigh. Right? The dawn, what do they say? The night is darkest just before the dawn. And we need to remember that. It's a really great opportunity for us to have a witness in a very, very messed up, mixed up, divided America. So let's all remember that. When we come back, we'll talk to Steve Cortez, senior advisor of the Trump campaign. This is Steve Noble live from RFA Church today. The Evangelicals for Trump, praise, prayer, and patriotism. Eric Trump was here earlier, was on the show earlier. And we'll talk to Steve Cortez from the Trump campaign when we come back right after this. This is Steve Noble on the Steve. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, live from RFA Church here in Raleigh, North Carolina, at the Evangelicals for Trump event. Praise, prayer, and patriotism. Eric Trump was here earlier and just gave a great, really down-to-earth but inspiring speech. He's very funny. It was just cool to have him here, and then he called in, so it was great to talk to him. And then we're switching gears now, talking to Steve Cortez, who's been in the world of media for a while, got involved with the Trump campaign back in 2015 and 2016, and is now a senior advisor to the Trump campaign. Steve, thanks so much for calling in, man. How are you?
Hey, you bet. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. We appreciate your time. I can't imagine if you guys are getting any sleep at all. But last night, the debate,
much,
I mean, there were a lot of us praying.
God bless you.
So tell God me about your reaction to – you're welcome. You're welcome. So what was your reaction, Steve, to the debate last night?
Well, listen, you know, I think we saw a president who was very poised, presidential, and optimistic. And I think it was really an incredible contrast versus our opponent. You know, unfortunately, the Democratic Party of 2020 and Joe Biden and his campaign, in some ways, they become almost purveyors of panic. And what I mean by that is they're really trying to exploit the anxiety that's out there, which is understandable in a time of pandemic. But we believe that they're trying to instill an irrational fear in people. And it's really exploitative in our view. It's not the way that a political movement should operate, but it's the way they've chosen to stage their campaign. I think you also saw it in terms of contrast, an incredible contrast of this Donald Trump. Even though he is the president of the United States, even though he's the incumbent, he is still very much the outsider running in very many ways again against the Washington establishment, because Joe Biden is the consummate insider, 47 years in office in the Washington swamp. And he would represent a retreat back to the pre-2016 days, to the pre-America First movement, back to globalism, back to economic submission to China, back to attacks upon religious liberty in this country. We don't want to go back there. That's what Joe Biden represents. And by the way, it's why so many big money interests have lined up behind him. Big tech, Hollywood, Wall Street titans. It's very clear, and the press loves to make a lot out of it, that they have more cash on hand than we do right now in the Trump campaign. First of all, we have plenty of money to get done what we need to get done into Election Day. But I will also say this. I'm actually proud of the fact that we are crushing their campaign in small-dollar fundraising. $200 and less, we're outraising them by $50 million. But in terms of big, big money checks, yes, they're beating us, and I'm not surprised. You know, when you have Michael Bloomberg willing to put $100 million into one state in Florida, we don't have those kind of donors. And by the way, I'm kind of proud in a sense that we don't. because it means that we're a movement of workers. We're not a movement of oligarchs.
Yeah, and that was so obvious last night. That's, I really appreciated when the president doubled down and reminded everybody that he isn't a politician. You had a 47-year politician across the stage from him. He wasn't a politician when he ran President Trump. He's still not a politician, even though he's the president of the United States. I thought it was just brilliant all night when he was talking about all talk and no action, 47 years. Eric Trump mentioned this from the stage to say, he said, if you drop your car off somewhere to get repaired, and they have it for 47 years, and at the end of the 47 years, you come back and say, hey, can I get my car? And he says, well, can you give me another 4 years? Of course you're not going to trust that person.
Right.
I was shocked, Steve. We're talking to Steve Cortez, senior advisor of the Trump campaign. I was shocked and elated, quite frankly, that Biden was willing to say, I want to get rid of fossil fuels, because in the swing states like Pennsylvania, that was just a shocker.
No, listen, it could put Pennsylvania. I think we were doing fine in Pennsylvania, but it's tight, absolutely, as is North Carolina. All these swing states are tight. I like our position, but we're not being complacent on anything. I think it might have put Pennsylvania over the top for us. There's also a lot of fracking in Michigan. A lot of people don't realize that. Michigan and Ohio, all three of those upper Midwest states, fracking is critical. You know, and by the way, it's important more than just, of course, it's particularly important to those states because that's where those direct jobs are. But it's so important to the whole country because it means that we're not just energy independent. We're actually energy dominant in this country. We are an energy superpower. That's an incredible thing for the United States, not just because of our prosperity. I mean, that's great. All the money that the production produces, the plentiful supply of affordable energy to power our factories, our homes, our cars, all of that's fantastic. But maybe even in a sense better than that is the national security benefit. The fact that we are not dependent on foreign countries for our energy needs, for our fuel, and that we cannot be held hostage again, as we were in the past in the 1970s, that we cannot be led around on a leash by a lot of volatile and sometimes, you know, really angry nations, quite frankly, that don't like the United States of America very much. So the idea that we would go backward on that is just, it's terrible economic policy, terrible national security policy. I'd also like to point out here, Steve, because I think this is important, while Joe Biden has tried to waffle and be all over the place, try to be all things to all people on energy, you know, he finally, I think, tipped his hand last night and told us where he stands. But I also want to point out that his running mate, Kamala Harris, 59% of the American people, according to Rasmussen's survey, do not believe that Joe Biden would finish his first term if he's elected. So given that, I think she is an incredibly consequential vice presidential candidate. We need to think long and hard about what a President Harris would mean if Joe Biden were to win. And on this issue of fracking, she has not been all over the map. She has been consistently 100% against fracking. So she is far to the left of even liberal Joe Biden. And I think that, quite frankly, should scare some of the American people. And I hope that will motivate some people out there who maybe weren't planning on voting, aren't terribly political. When they think about energy alone, I hope that's enough to convince some people to get involved if they're not registered. A lot of states you can same day register to get registered to vote. And I think it was a big mess up by Joe Biden. And you're in the Trump campaign. You know, we'll take it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was there was about a 2-minute clip that showed up on the president's Facebook and Twitter and almost immediately after the debate was over. I shared it as well of all the times when not just Joe, but Kamala Harris were talking about, no fracking, nothing on the public lands, which is a huge issue when you talk about fracking and developing our own energy. And to see, I mean, I'm 54 years old, Steve, to see the United States of America being a energy producing superpower is so shocking. So we're no longer held captive by the Middle East yet. And again, today with Sudan, these peace agreements that are showing up with Israel are just mind boggling. I was so upset last night that didn't come up because that's so good for the country. It's good for the world. It's good for obviously for the Trump presidency, and for them to remain silent on it was just unbelievably horrible.
Yeah, listen, he has been one of the best foreign policy presidents ever, if not the best ever. And I don't think that's hyperbole to say it, because if you look at these historic diplomatic breakthroughs, and they're just incredible, you haven't seen any normalization of relationships between Arab countries and Israel in 25 years. And we're now starting to line them up, right? UAE, Bahrain, now Sudan, and I think more to come. And the president talked about that today. It's really incredible. And not only did he accomplish it, but he did it without U.S. intervention. That's critical. This has been a policy, an America First policy of realism and restraint. So he has built our military up so that they are ready to fight everywhere in the world, but they are not fighting. They're not looking for fights. The exact opposite happened when Joe Biden was in power, when he was the vice president of the United States. We did not properly equip and fund our military, yet we sent them all over the world to engage in nation building and endless wars. And it was catastrophic for this country. We paid a terrible price, both in American blood and also in American treasure. And it didn't make us safer. Donald Trump and his America First approach to foreign policy has yielded real results in the world. And again, we are not intervening all over the world. We're not nation building. As a matter of fact, we are drawing down the wars that were instituted by his predecessor. So it is, I think, one of his greatest accomplishments and one of his most compelling reasons to get reelected. And in your state, North Carolina is a heavy military state. I'm sure a lot of military members, folks themselves, troops and their families appreciate the approach that this president has taken regarding our military.
Oh, absolutely. And Eric was talking about that from the stage here today at the Evangelicals for Trump event. We're live from RFA Church in Raleigh talking to Steve Cortez, senior advisor for the Trump campaign. And he brought that up. He kept using this one line, Steve, of hilarious. Why did it take a real estate development guy from New York to accomplish these things? And it was because he's not a member of the swamp. He's not a politician. He just comes in and he's a problem solver. So you see problems, you get people to the table, which is why he's willing to meet with some people that Joe Biden or Obama wouldn't meet with. Let's go sit down and see if we can get something done here. And he's always working multiple angles. And it's amazing that the left hasn't figured that out yet, but it's been very effective, like you said.
Yeah, no, listen, you're exactly right, by the way, to take a business approach, an outsider's point of view of how do we figure this out in the world. He said, we don't have to negotiate the same way we've always negotiated in the Middle East, right? We can, in a sense, reinvent the wheel and do this a different way. And the results have been amazing. And to your point, you know, so I'm speaking to you from Trump campaign headquarters in Arlington, Virginia, and I have a terrific view looking over the Potomac River at the Washington Mall. It's really fabulous. But one thing about the city that isn't fabulous is it is dominated by an establishment that has been so entrenched for decades. And by the way, it's largely bipartisan, but this establishment exists. Yeah. For its own gain, for its own self-aggrandizement, not for the betterment of the people. And in regards to foreign policy, there's a foreign policy establishment in this town that has really in some ways operated almost as a parallel government in some ways, not very accountable to the American people. And that foreign policy establishment is highly interventionist because it's what they do, and there's an arrogance to it. They believe that they can arrange the world as if it's sort of a puzzle board, right? And that they can arrange all of the world through intervention and create a world, you know, that they want or that they perceive as being advantageous. The president takes a totally different approach to the world, right? Says, for the most part, there are not American interests that require us to get directly involved. Through persuasion, through business, through diplomacy,
right.
We can achieve our ends without risking American blood.
Yeah, such a great point. Steve Cortez, senior advisor, Trump campaign. Thank you so much for calling in, Steve. We appreciate your time. We'll be praying for you.
Thank you so much.
All right, we'll talk to you later. You're very welcome. We'll talk to you later. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. We'll be right back after this.
So if you're happy in your stuff, and if 10% enough, stay away from Jesus.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, The Steve Noble Show, live from RFA Church here in Raleigh, North Carolina, one of the churches that's open. And I saw Pastor Rodney Finch here earlier. This is local talk right now, okay? So I'm just talking to my triangle peeps. Rodney Finch was here. He's here today, Calvary Chapel down in Apex. But there's not that many churches. More churches are getting open, but a lot of them still are kind of partially shuttered. RFA is wide open, which is great. And Pastor Chad Harvey, who's just doing a great job, very bold. He's been on the show a number of times in the past few months. And he said one Sunday morning here, he said, listen, you know you're taking a risk. COVID can be deadly, although, you know, 99.98% chance that you'll survive. It doesn't get down below, it doesn't get over a 2% chance of death until you get into the 75 and above. And there it's like 5.4%. So the vast majority of people, the vast majority, almost 100%. Will not kill you. It's not deadly for the overwhelming majority of people. And 40% of people are asymptomatic, meaning you get it and you don't even know you had it. So they, you know, antibody tests, for whatever reason, they get tested and they find out. But 80% that do get it don't have to go to the hospital. So for most people, it's not serious. It's kind of like the flu. And for some people it is, and the older you are and the more comorbidities you have, the more serious it is. So I don't ever brush it off, because as far as we know, about 200,000 deaths, and a lot of that's going to be people with COVID, didn't necessarily die of COVID. All that stuff, it got politicized right away. So very difficult days, but I'm live from RFA Church and appreciate Pastor Chad, like I said, a couple of Sundays ago, said, hey, listen, you know it's dangerous. You're making a decision. I love you. I care about you, but I trust you enough to make your own decisions. I'm not your dad. And that would have been a good thing for the president to say last night. Hey, I'm not your daddy. So I trust the American people. Here's the other thing. And we were talking to Eric Trump in the first segment of the show. So if you missed that, you can go back on Facebook Live or when the podcast comes out and check that out. And then we just talked to Steve Cortez, who's a senior advisor with the Trump campaign. Last night, did you notice, and this has been consistent, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris just selling fear. Fear, 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 fear. I got so upset at one point last night watching the debate with my wife. I'm like yelling at the TV, of course, going, here in America, we don't live based on fear. In America, we have a history of being fearless. So we are willing to go to war with ourselves over the issue of slavery, where about 750,000 Americans died, bloodiest war in American history. And we didn't shrink back in fear from dealing with that national sin of slavery. And so we engaged it. And then when you look at World War I, and when you look at World War II, an existential threat to all humanity, and the growing nightmare of Nazism and Adolf Hitler and the Axis powers, and we didn't shrink back in fear. We invested. We crossed the ocean. We flew. We got on boats. We got in submarines. We went after it. And in Vietnam, whether you agree with it or not, in Korea, that wasn't fear of communism. We engaged it. In 9/11, we saw this just beautifully with 9/11 when we were like, okay, we got hit and we got hit hard, but we're not going to cower in fear over the Islamic terrorists. We're going to engage. We don't operate out of fear. And that's what I was yelling last night. Fear is not American. Wisdom, okay, I'm with you there. Sober-mindedness, oh, yep, I'm with you there. Paying attention, because for some people this can be a deadly disease. Absolutely. It's just like, should you be serious when you drive? Yes. Why? Because people's lives are at stake. Okay? But we don't operate out of fear, and that's what Joe Biden's just capitalizing, trying to capitalize on the fear of the nation. Is that good for America? It's horrible for America. And we aren't naturally fearful people. We face our challenges. We face our troubles, be them economic, social, whatever the case may be. And so that's where I was just getting enraged by that, going, hey, quit selling fear. Fear is un-American. I'm not saying don't be sober-minded. Of course we need to be sober-minded. But I think those were some of the president's best moments when he was just like, hey, we didn't know what we were dealing with, but we can't keep this place shut down. You want to shut it down because you have a spike here and there. But he said from the start, and this is when I started saying back in like March or April, that we brought an atom bomb to a knife fight. That, and Trump said this, the president said this, his concern was that the solution would be worse than the problem, that the shutdowns would cause all kinds of problems that would actually hurt more people in America than COVID-19 itself. And that's what we're seeing. And we're still in 2020. These are dominoes that are going to be falling for a while. And the president mentioned that last night. Suicide, depression, anxiety, alcoholism, increased drug use. And then on the issue of abuse, that we've locked the abuse victims in the home with the abuser. And we're not going to see all these dominoes fall by November 3rd or by the end of this year or even by the end of next year. And I'm very concerned about our school-age kids who now we're turning them into just little fear-mongering, afraid of their own shadow. And the numbers, do you know the numbers? I was screaming this at the TV last night as well, because I wish the president had brought these up. And you should write this down or try to remember it. In the United States of America, from kindergarten through the end of college, okay, kindergarten through the end of college, do you know how many students there are in America in that range? So that's pretty much all students, kindergarten through the end of college. So it's 1 to 24 years of age. Do you know how many there are? 76 million. Okay, there's 76 million students, kindergarten through college. Do you know how many of those 76 million students have died from COVID? It hasn't reached 250 yet. Okay, now 220, 230, 100, 110, 50, 75, those are all tragic. But you just do the numbers. And you go, okay, should we shut all this stuff down when 200, 250 out of 76 million die from this disease? Should we shut it all down and create all the other problems? No, because you actually have, if you look at the last flu season, and I'm not comparing COVID mortality rates to flu mortality rates, although they've gotten closer together. So don't jump on me for that. But if you look at, we have hundreds and hundreds of students die every year in the flu season. 400, 500. Okay. Do we shut everything down from November to March? We do not. And actually, students have a better chance of dying from a lightning strike than they do from COVID-19. So do we shut school down every time there's a nasty thunderstorm out there? Oh, you can't go catch the bus. You can't walk to your car. You can't walk to school because there's some thunder and lightning and you might die. And I thought the president did a good job last night of alluding to we can't keep living like this, and we can't. And so let's hope that enough people were listening. It was a much smaller audience, by the way, last night than it was in the first debate, because you've got a good number of people that have already voted, and other people. Listen, most people, the Democrat, no matter who it is, no matter how long they hide in the basement, they're always going to get 42, 43, 44% of the vote. Always. Just a done deal that they're going to get that. The Republicans on the other side, it's always going to be the same thing. 41, 42, 43% of the vote. Because when you look at registered voters around the country, it's 30, 30, 40. Okay, try to remember these numbers. 30, 30, 40. 30% are registered Democrats. 30% are registered Republicans. 40% are registered independent. Okay, then when it comes to turnout, that's a little bit different. So you usually get, that's why it's so close. So you still have people in the middle, and there's going to be some people flipping. Eric Trump mentioned this earlier. He was here earlier, and he was on the show in the first segment. He mentioned this earlier that the number one search term last night on Google, starting at 8 p.m., I think that must be West Coast time, after the debate, was the number one phrase search term on Google was, can I change my vote? Isn't that, he said he was going to put it up on Twitter this afternoon because he's probably on a plane right now. Think about that. Maybe that's the impact that the debate had. People are going, can I switch my vote? Because, again, there were so many points that were made, and I was asking people on Facebook Live to give a grade to Trump and his performance, give a grade to Biden and his performance. Forget your partisanship. Forget who you're voting for, just in terms of overall performance. And it was pretty much a 7, a 8, or a 9 for Trump and about a 3 or a 4 for Biden. And I think that last night, consequential. And also when Biden said, basically owned up to the fact, yes, we want to get rid of fossil fuels. You get rid of fossil fuels, America will fall apart. And do we want to transition? Would it be great one day to be away from fossil fuels and have a purely renewable energy source that's super clean and actually cheap? Yes. Do you think there's capitalists out there that would love to be the guy? You know who's going to be the richest person in the history of the world? That's going to be the person that figures that out. Some clean, renewable, cheap energy that replaces fossil fuels, and they'll become the wealthiest person that ever lived. Do you think there's an incentive out there for that? Of course there is. Are there people out there and corporations out there and the government funding opportunities to try to develop that? Yes. But that's going to take care of itself. That will happen. So it's just a fascinating night. Let's remember, we're coming up on the end of the show. Let's just remember to keep praying. We need to be people of prayer. Over these next 9-10 days, it's critical, and we have to trust the Lord. So on November 3rd, November 4th, November 5th, remember who's actually on the throne. Remember who's actually superimposing their will over all of human history. And if you know him through his son, Jesus Christ, you can be secure in that. Your house is built on the rock. It's not built on the sand. It's not built on politics. It's not built on the right. It's not built on the left. It's not built on a Donald Trump presidency or a Joe Biden presidency. Your house is built on the rock of Jesus Christ. And that should allow us to weather these storms and continue to be people of joy and people of hope. This is Steve Noble. It is the Steve Noble Show, live again today from RFA Church, Evangelicals for Trump, Praise, Prayer, and Patriotism with Eric Trump. It was a great day. And God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.